The following is a class given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on January 11, 1987 in Radhadesh. The class begins with a reading from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Majjalila.
Reading from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhyalila, on Rupa and Sanatan Goswamis, how they were doing everything to fulfill the desires of Lord Chaitanya. At that time we also were discussing the wonderful characteristics of Madhavendra Puri, who also, although he was perfect in his realization of Krishna consciousness, he, when ordered by Gopal to get sandalwood, he walked thousands of kilometers in order to procure some sandalwood. Sandalwood can be ground into a paste and placed on the head or body to make one very cool. Since Gopal was in the forest, the deity of Gopal was in the forest for a long time without any worship, and the sun, the deity felt hot, so he wanted sandalwood paste to be applied on his body. So Madhavendra, this is not unusual, but there are some deities in India that year-round they have sandalwood paste. There's one Narasingha deity in South India. It's supposed to be very angry mood of Narasingha Dev. So to keep him cool down, they cover his entire form with sandalwood paste. And once a year they take off the sandalwood paste, and then you can see the deity underneath for one day. Then they again put sandalwood for the rest of the year. But that's unusual. But generally, I think here also all the temples, they offer sandalwood. But this Gopal deity, he was feeling very hungry, or rather very hot. So he wanted to have sandalwood applied. So Madhavendra Puri, although he didn't have any money, didn't have anything, he had only his desire to serve the Lord. He walked thousands of miles to procure sandalwood, which was very expensive. So when he got to Jagannath Puri and got the sandalwood, then he also personally carried the sandalwood on his back. In fact, sandalwood was such a rare item that it was illegal to export it from that country. So he had to go to the government and get a special permission to export the sandalwood. And as he was every day carrying about 100 pounds of sandalwood, and he's walking 30, 40, 50 kilometers a day just walking with the sandalwood, one day he went through a check post, a toll gate, and the customs officer, or toll officer, confiscated all the sandalwood, said, "You're a smuggler. You're not allowed to take this out of the country while you're transporting sandalwood. This is only meant for Jagannath, who's in Orissa." And although Madhavendra Puri was such a great devotee, he had to undergo all these type of difficulties. Having his sandalwood confiscated, being falsely accused. We were just remarking how there's such a parallel, striking parallel in the life of Srila Prabhupada and Madhavendra Puri, that although he didn't have anything, he had renounced the world, he was just living in Vrindavan, he didn't have any money, he was ordered by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur to spread the Krishna conscious movement to the West. He had to go to get permission to go, had to get visa and so many things. It was very hard to procure. They said, "Why do you want to go? Why do you want passport? You're too old." You see, in India, if you want to leave the country, first you have to go to the government. Even if you have passport, you can't leave. You have to have a clearance. They don't want an Indian citizen, they show up somewhere and they don't have any ticket, they don't have any money. Then the Indian government has to pay to bring them back. So therefore, they have a clearance check. So he had to go through all these problems, and they didn't want to give him clearance to go. And finally he got the clearance. Then just as like Madhavendra Puri, he was walking back to Vrindavan. So to go to the West, the most primitive means of going was to go by a freight ship. The no more primitive way of going somewhere from between India and say America is the most primitive way is going by a freighter. I mean, plane would have been far more, you see, comfortable, or even some kind of a passenger ship. This is a freight ship, an ordinary, you see, goods ship. So he was also going through all this struggle. And when he was in America, they also didn't want to extend his visa. So he had to go through a lot of difficulties. And just seeing how Madhavendra Puri, he also had to go through difficulties. But it said that he was doing everything as a labor of love. Because it was the desire of Krishna to do these services. Therefore, for him, it was, however difficult it was, he was still determined to go on because this was the desire of Krishna. So I heard that today and tomorrow, like All Saints Day or All Souls Day, people remember their forefathers, put flowers on it. So I thought it was appropriate we can remember the previous acharyas, our spiritual forefathers. You see, actually, what is Krishna consciousness? You see, in India, of course, people, they have an idea that if you become a sadhu, or if you become, in other words, a saint or a devotee, some type of a monk, that means you give up all work. And you just do some meditation and take it easy. This is the general idea that they have in India. When someone takes to the saintly life, you see, what devotional service is a bit different. It's not that type of yoga. Because ours is an active meditation. Ours is a meditation through dedication. We dedicate our mind, we dedicate our words, we dedicate our activities in the service of Krishna. Ultimately, we dedicate our heart, everything. The Atma, the soul, is dedicated to Krishna. So, of course, Madhavendra Puri, although he got his sandalwood confiscated, he produced that paper he had got from the government and said, look it, I have permission. Had to go through the customs, had to go to the higher officer, had to get it released. But he got the sandalwood back. Similarly, Prabhupada, he had to leave America first time. He went to Canada when they canceled his visa, but then he got a new visa. Then he came to Europe and established a preaching. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was the greatest scholar. Even at the age of 11, he was such a great astronomer that he had discovered a star. He discovered a star that no one had discovered before. Therefore, he was given the title Saraswati. But when he wanted to take initiation from his guru, the guru gave him such a hard test that he didn't know if he could achieve. So in the beginning, he wasn't even accepted by his guru. Had to go through a lot of tests, then finally he was accepted. So, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, actually he had a very big struggle, very big opposition. Because he was preaching in India that no one has a monopoly for spiritual life, for Krishna consciousness. Before, there was a caste Goswamis, that they claim that you had to come in a particular family in order to become a guru or in order to become Krishna conscious. And anyone who wanted to practice Krishna consciousness had to come in that family. And then they were not actually qualified. Family was a good family, coming from disciples of Nityananda or Advaita. But the actual follower, these person, they were not practicing Krishna consciousness according to the rules and regulations. So, Bhakti Siddhanta, in fact, they said, well, if you want to follow Lord Chaitanya, you have to go through us, these other caste Goswamis. But to go into the temple, you have to pay a toll, 50 cents, 50 paisa. You have to pay a certain donation, fixed. Couldn't go in free to pay an admission. So in this way, everyone had to go through them, and you had to also pay every day a little tax. So it was a whole, you see, monopoly they were trying to make. It was a big problem. So then when Lord Chaitanya started to preach that no matter what family you're from, even if you're from foreign countries, you can become a Brahmana. You can be a Vaishnava. You can preach Krishna consciousness. You can practice that. There's Lord Chaitanya This is a universal movement. It's not anybody's, monopoly. Anyone can take part. Then this vested interest. And he also made a temple. He said anyone can come in the temple. You don't have to pay any charge. Temple is for Krishna. It's for everyone. You don't have to pay anything. So then he took a big procession. 50,000 people on Navadvip Parikram, Mayapur Navadvip Dam. He went around with 50,000 people. He had his own motor launches. Motor launches mean type of motorized boat, but big ones. They can hold 300-400 people. He had two. He had horses. He had the first motor car in India, practically of any civilian person. He had so many things going and big preaching. So one day he was taking this 50,000 people around on a parikram. And when he went in the town of Navadvip, and he was giving a strong lecture, that time these caste conscious priests, they were hiding on the roof of the buildings, and they started to throw big rocks down on Bhakti Siddhanta to kill him. And then they had hired people to go and capture him and to kidnap him and kill him. So suddenly there was this big attack right on the big procession. So that time they had to take Bhakti Siddhanta, and one disciple gave him his cloth and took Bhakti Siddhanta's cloth, and then he ran. So all that hired people ran after the decoy, and Bhakti Siddhanta was taken away. So he had to go through a lot of difficulties. In fact, one police chief came and told him that these caste priests, they have come to me and offered me a big reward if I will murder you. He says, but I told them that although we do this thing, so I won't kill a saint. It'll be too big a sin for me. Too bad a karma. I won't take that karma. So he warned him, you be very careful. They're out to get you because of your preaching. So actually, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was able to preach so widely, facing a lot of obstacles. Then Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, of course, he was very humble. He was very humble. He did not know reading or writing. So he felt himself humble. He didn't feel himself qualified to go out and preach. But we know that he was a great preacher because the way he inspired Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur to preach. The Prabhupada Gaur Kishore Das Babaji was so elevated a Vaishnava that by his association people would become easily inspired to practice Krishna consciousness. But then in those days, people would always come to him and request him for some material benediction. It's like, this is a common thing. Like mostly the people when they go to church or go to mosque or temple, they pray to God, please give me something. Give me I want a wife, or I want a husband, or my son is sick, or I need to pass my examination, or I need my business needs some help. They always ask for some material thing. So people are always going to him, and they would say, Swamiji, can I ask you something? He said, what is that? And then they would say, please give me, my brother is sick, so please give me him good health, give some blessing. So he got distracted, you know. I'm trying to worship Krishna. If someone wants to come and ask me some Krishna conscious question, it's all right. But they're only coming and asking this useless questions. This happened to me one day. I was walking on the street. All of a sudden, some lady, she ran up to me, and right on the street in India, she paid her obeisances, just, you know, on the street, and she tried to grab my feet, and, you know. Then I said, you know, what is it? Then she said, oh, Maharaj, kripa karo, have your mercy. So, what do you want, you know? And she said, oh, my husband's got an ulcer. Please give a blessing so that the ulcer goes away. So like that, he got, after so many people, because he was very famous, that he did some miracles and things, so he was became very famous. So he used to sit beside the, finally he moved and he sat by the latrine, by the public urinal. That's not exactly like the men's room or women's room in the airport in Brussels. This is kind of open air, not so sanitary, having some bad smell. He sat near to that, That way all the people wanting some material thing, they'll say, oh, this is a dirty place, and they just stay away. So you can chant. And if someone is really transcendental to all these things, they'll go up to him and they ask a spiritual question. So like that. Actually, he was so renounced that he used to eat, he would have a bowl and he would take his prasad from the bowl. But the bowl was the inside of a human skull. It was a hollowed out skull. He'd take from that to remind himself that life is temporary. He's very austere. Many other stories about Gaurakishore Das Babaji. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he had to face a difficulty to find Lord Chaitanya's birthplace. That was a very big endeavor. He researched it very deeply. Where is the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? But most people told him it's lost in the Ganges. But after a very big search, one day he looked outside of his window and there in the night, just opposite the Jalangi River, he could see a brilliant light coming. And he got inspiration, that's the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya. So then he took Jagannath Das Babaji, who was about 113 years old at the time. And due to rheumatism, he was all, just bundled up couldn't sit straight. He was just like this. He chanted. So he'd become so reduced due to old age that Thakur Bhakti Vinod carried him in a basket on his head. He was just like a ball. So then they came to one spot and Bhakti Vinod Thakur said, what is that? He asked the local farmers, it's like a jungle there. He said, oh, that is a useless place. He said, oh, this, nothing grows there. He says, no matter what you plant, simply tulsi comes out. We've tried so many times, but this tulsi is coming. So there he saw so many tulsis in a big jungle. So then he walked inside that tulsi forest. And just in the middle, all of a sudden, Jagannath Das Babaji, he jumped up. Haribo, Haribo! Although he's never even walked, he's jumping up and chanting, Haribo, Haribo! This is the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki! Yeah. He's jumping in ecstasy. So, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur, to build a place at the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya, he went to door, requesting 1 rupee per person to give for Lord Chaitanya. He collected 30,000 rupees. By 1 rupee, 30,000 people he got donation. He only wouldn't accept more than 1 rupee. Because he didn't want to give the impression that he was making some commercial thing. In those days it was very sensitive. You had to be careful how you acted to keep the proper respect. So he did a lot of, these are just samples. Then of course there's Baladev Vidyabhushan. He was a great acharya. He was challenged by the other sects. They challenged him that, you see, every sampradaya, every disciplic succession had their own translation and commentary of the Vedanta Sutra. The Shankaracharya had, Madhva Acharya, Ramanuja, Nimbarka, Vishnu Swami, they all had their own commentation on the Vedanta Sutra. So when he presented, well, what's your philosophy? Just like Shankaracharya says, Advaita, oneness. And Madhva Acharya is Dvaita, duality, that there's two. Then Ramanuja is Vishishta Advaita, that oneness with some variegatedness. Like this, each one has their own philosophy. So he said, well, ours is the philosophy of Lord Chaitanya, Achinta Veda Veda Tattva. I said, that's not a philosophy. If it's a philosophy, where's your Vedanta Sutra commentary? There must be a Vedanta Sutra commentary according to your philosophy. And if it's not, we don't accept it as being a bona fide, path. So he said, no, we have one. He said, actually didn't have any. He said, no, we have one. He said, just, I'm bringing it out in a few days. So he went in to Govinda ji, and he paid his obeisances, and he prayed to Govinda that please, to save the name of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his movement, I need your special mercy for having this commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. So then the deity, on his sincere praying, you can imagine how he prayed. He was very, very sincerely praying. Pure devotion. Lord Govinda personally dictated the commentary, and he wrote it down, and the entire Vedanta Sutra commentary. That commentary, therefore, is known as the Govinda Bhashya, or the commentary of Govinda, because it was his dictation. So then he, after a very short time, he had the perfect commentary. He went out and presented, this is our commentary on Vedanta. They were amazed. So like that, Srinivas Acharya, Narottam Das Thakur, Shyamananda Pandit, they took the first book distribution party out, blessed by all the Vaishnavas, given blessing by Govindaji. But en route, they got all the books stolen. It's a long story. But still, in spite of having the book stolen, he endeavored and wouldn't give up trying. Eventually, things worked out. So, like that, we can see that our previous predecessors, they had to go through different difficulties. They had to go through different tests by Krishna. But in the end, Krishna would reward them with pure devotional service, with successful missions. So in this way, today is it's a day to remember that. We can remember our predecessor, we see spiritual masters, how they have spread the Krishna conscious movement in spite of various difficulties and obstacles. So that hasn't changed. Even now in the 20th century, people are more engrossed in illusion in most cases, and they're not so eager for a spiritual life. But Lord Chaitanya, he could flood the whole of Nodia with the love of Godhead, the whole of India, whole of the world. So similarly, his movement today can also inundate the world with love for Krishna. Prabhupada actually created the Krishna conscious movement in order to inundate the people with love of Godhead, to attract all kinds of people with the priority of developing their love for Krishna. Actually, in this regard, Prabhupada stated in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that sometimes in Mayapur there's a grand flood after the rainy season. And that is an indication by Lord Chaitanya that from the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya, the Sankirtan movement should expand its preaching all over the world and inundate the world in love of Godhead. So this year there was also a very big flood in Mayapur. Today I showed a slideshow of the flood this morning in Bhaktivedanta Manor. Don't know if there's time tomorrow. You could show it if you have a projector. Some of the scenes. The flood lasted about 5 weeks, and the water rose up about 2 meters inside the temple. And outside in the villages it was 3 meters and more in many places. But we distributed about prasadam to 4,000 or 5,000 people a day by delivering it to the inundated villagers by boat, motorboat, which we had purchased for the purpose. This all happened after Jai Gopal invited me. I mean, after Sweden, when we went back, this happened on August 25th until October 2nd. Just a recent thing. So that is also a message by Lord Chaitanya to flood the world with a love for Krishna. So I'm very glad to hear how the devotees here in Radhadesh are flooding Belgium with love for Krishna, spreading the movement of Srila Prabhupada. I'm sure that by your determination, Krishna will give you all mercy. Lord Chaitanya Prabhupada give all mercy to go on expanding the Krishna conscious movement. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Any questions? Yes? There was another program of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It was the Namahat. Namahat is basically the program to encourage people to chant in their homes and then to organize those spiritualized homes into associations of devotees which meet on a daily or regular basis and associate with each other in Krishna consciousness, chant, read the scriptures, and engage in different type of preaching activities. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur had established more or less 500 or more Navhata centers in about 100 years ago. A few of them are still running. We come across a few of the original Namhata centers established by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. They build temples and they have a whole community. Hundreds of people chanting japa for 100 years. But there's been no cultivation. So only a couple are still running. Most of them, they gradually stopped. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he had instructed that this Namhat preaching is the most important. This will become the most significant form of preaching in the world in the future. And predicted that amongst all preaching, this will shine out as a very dynamic form of establishing Krishna consciousness. Or Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur also instructed to do Namhat, but he established temples and printed books. And at a young age, actually, he left the world, didn't really get beyond it. And Prabhupada, he took up first printing books, establishing temples, but then in the end he said that we should do Varnashram preaching. Prabhupada instructed that we should set up this type of congregational units by bringing people to our temples and training them for a few days or a week and then have them return back to their homes and begin the chanting of Hare Krishna, and what they learn in the temple they can practice in their own home. So 1977 we were attacked in Mayapur when the government, the communist government, came in power. And at that time the government gave misinformation to the press and made a bad publicity against us. So that time I organized some mass meetings, mass movement of the public who knew the actual fact, the local devotees of Lord Chaitanya. Because in Bengal there are many devotees of Lord Chaitanya. So we organized a procession of 25,000 people to march to the village chanting Hare Krishna. And after that the local politicians stopped creating problems and the government started to take a different stance when they saw we were like so mobilized. So at that time when the 25,000 people were marching, there was something like 160 kirtan groups. And it was so amazing to see those kirtan groups. Every kirtan group was singing their own tune, their own song. And you'd go from one to the next, it'd be like bee going to different flowers, tasting honey. You know, one kirtan, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare. You know, then you go to the next one, Hare Krishna, Krishna. You go to the next one, then they're going, you know, Hare Krishna, Hare. You know, everyone is a, and practically everyone is a different tune. I mean, more tunes than I know how to sing, or even the good kirtan singers don't know. I mean, it's so many tunes. And it left a lasting impression. That's when I approached Prabhupada, that there's such a power there. There's so many people chant Hare Krishna in Bengal, but we don't have any mobilization of them. There's no coordination. There's no unity. And I want to make an organization to unify all the kirtan groups and the devotees of Lord Chaitanya, as well as to train up new people to be devotees. So Prabhupada said to do that. He gave his blessing, gave some guidelines. He agreed. But then soon after the Prabhupada left the planet, things were set back a little bit. I didn't know what to call the group or organization. Then we found, Bhakti Churu Maharaj gave me a copy of the one Gaudiya Patrika, one magazine, one journal, Vaishnav journal, which was published from Navadvip. And this particular issue of that journal was edited by Srila Prabhupada. He took sannyas from Keshav Maharaj, and so this journal was published from the Keshav Maharaj's temple. And for 4 or 5 years, he was the president editor of that magazine. So it just happened that, I think 4 or 5 years, but anyway, this issue, it said A.C. Bhaktivedanta. At that time, he was not sannyasi, he was vanaprastha, but A.C. Bhaktivedanta. Abhoy Charan Bhaktivedanta, and he said president of the paper. So in that magazine, it gave five chapters from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's book on the Namhat. And that's so far the only evidence, I mean, the direct work we could find about that where Bhaktivinoda specifically was telling what the Namhat was. And I read that and I found that what we wanted to do, what Prabhupada said, is actually the Namhat. I mean, there's no difference. Except that Bhaktivinoda has already thought out the whole thing and made a blueprint. So then I thought we should call this Sankirtan movement a Namhat movement, because that's the Namhat organization, because that's the name Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying. It's his idea. We're simply... And actually Bhaktivinoda's Namhat was originally the Namhat made by Lord Nityananda. And he reinstated it. So it dates back 500 years ago that Lord Nityananda was the first person to establish Namahata. So we started to enroll persons who like to chant Hare Krishna, and that to be at least 5 members who would chant at least one day a week together and read Prabhupada's books. And the first year we had 45 members, 45 groups. Next year we had 150. Next year 250. Next year it grew to 400. Then it grew to 750. Almost doubling every year. It's a little less than doubling. Then went 1200. Now there's something like 1,700 in Bengal, 300 in Orissa, 100 in Assam, like this. These are groups. Each group has about 50 people. So it became so much that we, even though we had a staff of 20 people, we had to gradually build up to, it wasn't enough to supervise almost 2,000 groups, because we worked maybe 6 teams. Even if 6 teams would visit one center every 2 days, they could barely cover once in a whole year just visiting. So it wasn't good enough. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his structure, he had a system of senapatis, commanders, circle commander, district commander, state commander. So we made a system like that. Every 12 groups became a circle. And they had a circle commander. And then just for his assistant, he had sub-circle commanders, upachakra. Sanskrit is chakra senapati and upachakra senapati. And then 3 circles became a mahachakra, greater circle. But it sounds better in Sanskrit, mahachakra. So like this, now we are tuning up this infrastructure, that these senapatis are actually Namhat members. And they have to, responsibility that they have to visit one Namhat center every week on the lower levels. And they have to send in report. And so now our preachers, they go every month, there'll be a Mahasamilan. That means a great reunion where 4 or 5 Namhata will come together and meet and have a big kirtan. And once every 3 months, 12, all the 12 will get together. So in this way, that generates more enthusiasm. Say 5, 10, 20, 30 people are chanting in one village. But then on once a month, and rotation, that means once in a year, all the Namhata Sanghas in the area, they'll all come and do a big Harinam and have a little festival. And then the local people will see hundreds of Namhat devotees, not just the 10 or 20 they see all the time. So then that inspires them. So that's the basic... It's just like a slight glimpse of the Namhat. But Namhat is, it's how you see, in Bengal you can get Namhat number easier. But it's hard to maintain a high quality. Because there's so many Sahajyas and Mayavadis and so many different groups. That to increase the quality is difficult. We find that in Namhat, in Bengal you get to 1 per week groups fairly easily. But to maintain them active and to get them to come up to once a day is difficult. Where like in some other places, very hard to get a group, but if you get a group, because it's like they're not, like in Bihar, another state of India, they're not followers of Lord Chaitanya, they're more followers of Shankaracharya. If you convince them to follow Lord Chaitanya, then they're very fired up people. They'll go every day and have Mangal Arati at 5 in the morning. 4 in the morning, the Mangal Arati and the whole class. Just like a little temple. So we have different categories of Namhat. We have Namhat associations. Then we have Namhat centers and Namhat temples. So a center meets every day. And a temple has a deity and actually does a worship. And an association meets less than once a day. Maybe once a week, twice a week, three times a week, but not daily. So now we're going through the whole, we're always trying to bring it up and refine it. We've started different programs of gurukuls. Some of the villages, they've started gurukuls. We have about 10 gurukuls functioning. And some of the groups have started book distribution. One group last year distributed 60,000 pieces of literature. So we gave them, the year before they had done 20,000. And the president of Calcutta gave them a big tape recorder so that they could play it with Prabhupada's bhajans while they're going and selling the books. And they bought a rickshaw, bicycle rickshaw, with a flat back to put all the books on. They pedaled to all the villages and show the books and distribute. So this year, again, they won. So they wanted a bullhorn, little, you know, bullhorn, hand mic, battery-operated hand mic. So I gave them one of my hand mics as a reward. So that now they go, come, get your Bhaktivedanta books now. You know, they're calling out. The idea is that all the Namhats, they also distribute books. They do festivals. They do different programs. And gradually trying to build up their standards so that, and eventually, may take many years, but we'll have hundreds and hundreds of temples everywhere. This year, at Nityananda's appearance day, we'll be having a Namhata reunion. Last year, we had at Ram's appearance day, there were about 600 people came, and one of the groups showed a drama that they had, like, type of caste gurus, they demand you have to cook them a fish dinner. So then, using that and some of their philosophy, the preacher, but the way they did it was quite interesting, and they made it satirical, kind of, it was funny. And they had to face a lot of obstacles. There's this one group, and they actually kidnapped the leader of the group and locked him inside his house. They wouldn't let him go out. They said, you're bringing this foreign group into our village. We don't want this. And he had to send a note out, and one Namhat preacher had to go there and rescue him. He was like in house arrest. In another village, all the people were objecting. So the women there were very powerful. And the women, they started to preach to the other women and get them fired up. So the women, for 6 months, they'd practice everything, but they wouldn't reveal to their husband that they were practicing, chanting and offering their prashanam. They'd simply feed prashad to the husband every day, even he didn't know it. And this way, after about 6 months, they became very strong, and husband's heart became softened by prashad. Then the wife would reveal that now I'm becoming I'm practicing Krishna consciousness here in the house, and you should give your blessings, and you should also practice. And then the husband, but then they'd be fixed, and somehow the wives would get the husbands also to practice. It was like an underground women's movement in this one village. Many interesting things happen. And so we do every year, we have the reunion, we have all the preachers tell the pastimes of their preaching. One told about how he went to all the school teachers in his district, and he gave them Prabhupada's books and said, you have to buy this for your school, you have to read it, and then I want you to give me a certificate, how you like it. And he produced a huge book of certificates. He said, everyone likes it. And he started reading some of the glories of Prabhupada books that they wrote. And then he told how he went to some communist teachers from the communist party. But even they said, no, we're not interested in all this religion, this opiate of the people, this, that. But then in the end, he defeated them. And they read Prabhupada's books, and they also gave a good recommendation. So it's very interesting. This year we'll have at Nityananda's appearance day, a month before Gaur Purnima. If any of you are in India, you can come and participate in the Namhat reunion. There will probably be more than 1,000 Namhat preachers from all over Bengal coming. It's like a little mini, sometimes it's bigger than actually the Gaur Purnima. Because you sometimes get 1,000. But it's all the villagers and people from the cities that are doing the Namhat preaching. This last year, Harikesh Maharaj happened to be there. He was amazed. He was completely amazed. He got very enthusiastic about it. Here in Belgium, you have Namhat programs. Like now in Germany, they're having. In England, they have. In Belgium and Benelux, they have Namhat yet. Because every country has to adapt according to their own situation. Even every state in India is different. We have to adapt. But I see that as the future for the Varnashram that Prabhupada wanted. Because how can you have Varnashram unless you have human beings? Real human civilization, real Varnashram begins when the people are Vaishnavas, at least on a Kanishna level. Then you can organize them as a Varnashram. So time for more questions? Any more questions? The teachings of Rupa Goswami state, Yena Tena Prakarina Krishna Mana Nivosate, that someone should be brought to the standard of developing love and attachment for Krishna. Now, if someone hasn't developed love and attachment for Krishna, and you tell them to surrender everything to Krishna, then they'll run away. So, on the other hand, if someone has developed love and attachment for Krishna to some degree, then proportionately they should surrender. And Prabhupada's situation was he was coming to the West, he required brahmanas on an urgent basis to carry on the movement. Even if he didn't need a congregation, that he needed brahmanas to take on the responsibility of continuing the movement because he was very physically old and he felt that he was going to leave any moment. So he wanted brahmanas to take up the movement. He wanted preachers. He wanted disciples that could carry on the message. But then, in the end, he said, I did half the work. The other half is to have a big congregation, to have a varnashram in a society amongst the people in general. So he sacrificed, because congregation is slow. We found, I don't know in this country, but I'm visiting America. We have a zone there. And there, the America today is very conservative. It's relatively conservative. People don't like to just change their lifestyle, give up their jobs, move in the temple. That's not like in the 60s or 70s, more people would easily join. Now the people, they're very conservative about any kind of sudden change. So there we've found that preaching to the people on the Namhat type of approach, that they should practice in their home, continue their job, by that type of public preaching, a lot of people come to the programs in my zone, and we're getting a good response. People aren't afraid to come. We've forbidden anyone to preach to anyone to join the temple, except the president or vice president, if they authorize it. In other words, unless they see that that a person is really that advanced, that they're ready to move in the temple, they're actually material to be like a full-time Brahmin, full-time, because we see the devotees in the temple are like priests, they're like monks. It's not, because sometimes people come to the temple and some devotee will just come up to them, you have to shave off your hair, you have to move in the temple, you're in Maya, Prabhu, you know. And just, you know, maybe the one man was there, a 60-year-old man in downtown New Orleans, and he's like a musician or something. He shows some magical tricks, and because that's a very cultural city, a lot of tourists come. So the devotees kept inviting him to come for the Sunday feast. So the first Sunday feast he comes, he's got big hair, he's old. I mean, he's like a hard, you know, very, you know, long-term kind of. He just came because for the feast they told him to come as a friend. That very day someone came up to him and said, you should shave off all your hair and move in there. The last time they ever saw him, you know. So, there definitely has to be a balance. We don't want people to move in prematurely. And it's not that we expect every person. Like in India, the way, what inspired me also for Namhat preaching was, in India, you have a different situation. We'd go out and distribute books, and sometimes we'd have a book table, and people would come and buy the books. Someone would buy a book and sit there and read the whole book right there at the table, just sitting on the side, read the book. He'd come up and say, one Sankirtan devotee came and told me that one man came up, he read the book, he said, I agree with your book, I accept, I want to be a devotee of Krishna, I want to surrender. Now tell me, what should I do? And the devotee said, all right, so you come and move in the temple, join the temple. I said, all right. I said, I'm working 35 years in the railway, I got 5 years before my pension. I got 14 kids, a wife, I got my dependent, unmarried two sisters, my grandmother, my mother, the other uncle, you know, he's got, and then I got 4 cows and the land with 20 acres, 5 hectares. So then, should I bring all of them? Well, I mean, I have to think about this one for a little, you know. See. Well, what can I want to do now? I agree. I accept. I accept your book. I accept the philosophy. I surrender. Now tell me what I should do. You can become a life member. You know, okay, tell me what I have to know. So then I don't have that much money to become life member, $1,000, but you know, I can give something every week, 50 rupees or something. So what else can I do? Would you like to buy some more books here? You know. So there's no program. We had people that were convinced of the Krishna consciousness, but we didn't have the infrastructure. It wasn't realistic to ask them to just move with all the whole family into a temple. Even Mayapur, we need to build up. Not every family can just move in like that. There's some adjustment. And we didn't just have the infrastructure, actually. We're getting so many people. So that was like a necessity to be able to preach, to have a program to cultivate them. I had a disciple in America. They're working, getting $50,000 a year each. Each had a job. But one got fired from the job because they weren't eat hamburgers with the boss. He's vegetarian. And the other one also that had difficulty at work. So it's like naturally, even though I encouraged them, just keep your job. They come every day to Mangal Arati. They did their work. But just like kind of naturally, it worked out that it wasn't very practical for them. So now they're going to open a new center somewhere. We have a little temple was donated to us, and they're going to be the head of that once they get trained up enough. So sometimes it works like that. You get actually, through Namhat congregational preaching, you end up with more bhaktas because less people are afraid to come. You know, actually people stay, if they, the Hare Krishna is going to just press me to be a member of their commune. So people stay away, they get afraid. If they know that you're not going to press them, you know, if they show a little interest, if they start asking the right questions, you know, this is really nice, I mean, you know, invite them, we'll stay over for the weekend, and then, you know, just do a little more, you know, a little naturally. That's the system we've used. So that's a kind of a balance. And the president or the authority, they had to be asked, well, I think this person, and then maybe they call the person and talk to them, see their situation, and then if they think, yes, actually, maybe this person could be a devotee, then they preach to him like that. But they don't just, like, without discrimination, just ask anybody and everybody. And then, you know, either you get people that aren't really ready to be devotees as the devotees, and then or you get people that scare people away that could, but they just have to come a little more gradually. Actually, we want people to be Krishna conscious, so you have to become more expert. At what level is this person? How can this person best practice Krishna consciousness? Sometimes you can't just, we'd like that everyone, actually we need people to live in temple and be full-time Brahmana preachers. We need that, but we also need congregations, so we have to see who, you know, if we get someone to be a full-time Brahmana, he can make 10 other families, he can 100 other people, he can make 1,000 devotees. You know, someone just practicing on their own, they may make one or two devotees from their own friends, be able to maintain. But we need Brahmanas to go and cultivate them and keep them. So naturally, if we see that someone can surrender and they have the ability, they have a chance to do it, we preach like that. But if we see that maybe it's not ideal for that person right now, it won't. Because sometimes you get an older person and you know that if they just move in the ashram, they're going to not make it. It will be not appropriate for them. They have to become a little more accustomed to the Krishna consciousness in it. It just means you have to be a little more personal in your approach, instead of just like everyone that comes in trying to enlist them into the army type thing. It would be just see what will help. So the Bhakti program leader and the folk pro, they work together. How we can help this person better with the president and the other spiritual preachers there. What's the best engagement for this person? And so someone comes in Mayapur immediately, you know, so they talk to him, they say, alright, send this one to the Bhakti program leader, send this one to the Namhat. Send this one to a life member maker. It's kind of, according to what you think they can do, they get sent off and they talk to someone, interviews them, like that. And because of having a strong Namhat program, we don't have hardly any bloop devotees as such. No one bloops. It's a question of either they're actively in the preaching force that's preaching from the temples, or they go and join the Namhat. They continue practicing. Nobody stops practicing Krishna. They take a lifetime vow. If for some reason someone can practice in the temple, they still continue practicing outside. They don't stop. Hardly out of 100 devotees, I don't think one or two ever bloop. and completely stop practicing Krishna consciousness. And a lot of times we get this thing that you get a Krishna conscious family, they send their son to be a devotee. One time the son went back, and then the parents, they said, "You're in Maya, why did you leave the temple?" You know, they said, "Well, this, that problem." They preach to their son, send him back to the temple. Of course you get the other kind too, they, you know, they try to kidnap their children, you know. But from the Namhad, you get parents like that. They actually want their child to make a... You, 2 years, you try it strongly. We want you to be Krishna conscious. That's a real unique, ideal situation. Maharajis, have any questions? Yes? In general, the stability of the movement has increased like anything. Our recognition, by having a broad base, our problems with the government, things like that, the communist government in Bengal has been there for, it's a third term now. And although they were initially very negative because they had such a wide base that they have a hands-off policy. They don't interfere with us at all anymore. And rather they come to us sometimes for votes and things like that. In general, there's a type of spiritual revival that we can see. We take it as the mercy of Prabhupada. And in the individual villages that do chant, they say that they can realize a lot of change individually, collectively as families, as well as in the village as a whole. Well, we can't discount that possibility. I don't think we should stop the preaching for preparing, but it could be a consideration that there's every likelihood in the future there could be a war. This type of rural project is supposed to be a situation where a person can take shelter in a war situation. Of course, if they say there's nuclear war, that's just like one big flash and then whole society gets turned upside down. So those communities which are self-sufficient, then after the fallout is over, after a couple of weeks, I think it lasts a few days or weeks, then they have the best chance for surviving. But I don't know what priority to put it on. Can't discount it, it's a consideration at the same time. It always seems like there's other priorities that come up. Hare Krishna, glory to Srila Prabhupada.